Hello, I'm Guy Somerset, and I'm Arts and Books Editor of the New Zealand Listener. Welcome to the third of our Listener Book Club podcast discussions, this month of Emily Perkins' fourth novel, The Forest, which has already received a run of rave reviews here in New Zealand, and more than one tip as a likely nominee for Britain's Man Booker Prize. The novel tells the story of the eponymous Forrest family across six or so decades, mostly through the eyes of Dorothy Forrest, who we accompany from childhood to old age. Here with me to discuss the book are Bronwyn Wiley-Gibb of Otago University Bookshop in Dunedin, Marcus Greville of Vic Books in Wellington, and Kieran Das, formerly of Unity Books in Wellington, but now of Unity Books in Auckland. Now, Perkins' previous novel About My Wife, won the Montana Medal for Fiction at the 2009 New Zealand Book Awards and also the Believer magazine's Book of the Year Award. But I'm wondering whether this new novel is a step forward again in her career. Kieran, what do you think?
Well, I've always been strangely loyal to Perkins, and I've never quite known why. I mean, the first thing I read of hers was the collection of short stories, Not Her Real Name, and that was about 15-odd years ago. And I've since figured out what it is. One of the reasons that I've been sort of struck by Perkins is that I'll never forget the atmosphere of those short stories that they evoke. The writer and the characters were just that fraction bit older than myself, so it seemed like an exciting sort of glimpse through the window of what might lay ahead. And each work of hers since then has sort of remained like that for me as she's gotten older and myself. But one of the most interesting things that I've actually noticed when I recently revisited those first short stories of hers is that her writing style hasn't actually changed that much. Even then, she had a really rather pristine and clipped and very measured and observational approach to storytelling. I mean, of course, now it's more refined and more adult, but you can see throughout her whole career she's had that style.
Bronwyn, have you read previous Perkins books?
No, I actually haven't. And like one of the things was when the first book of short stories came out, I was the exact age, and I read a couple of them, and I kind of got that sort of, you know, mid-20s thing of, I'm not going to read these. This is what my life is like. I'm not reading. And so I actually didn't read her other two novels.
Yeah.
And so I can't really answer the question, except that it does seem to me that from what people talk about, this is a progression and it's different, but it's also part of the journey that she seems to be on with writing very sort of realistically in a way that touches people.
Yeah.
About and makes you feel like you really are giving a glimpse of a life that could be yours.
Yeah. I'm currently rereading those earlier books, and I mean, there is a marked difference, I think. I mean, there is, even from the last novel, I think much more depth and soulfulness than there was before, alongside that shrewd wit. Marcus, have you read previous Perkins books?
I've read short stories, but none of the novels, although I do have a novel about my wife sitting next to my bed now. But I very much agree with Karen. It's the age thing with The Forest was huge for me. It seems to chart very clearly my whole demographic, right from 80s references through to current stuff.
The placing in time is very subtly done, I think. But occasionally it's just a line in one of the chapters, maybe a reference to the Sky Tower suddenly appearing or Newsnight being on TV. She doesn't overplay that sense of period, which would be so easy to do.
She's very clever at really jolting you out of one age and into another. Mm. And the way that she's handled aging it's beautifully handled, because it's so resonant and tangible, and there's a happy, sad sort of wistfulness to it, I think. And there's that line that the character Daniel says, how life can change if you're lucky to be around for it. It's sort of lovely, but it's also very wistful, and that sort of runs throughout the whole book, even right from the very beginning when Dot is young.
And, I mean, the interesting thing is with her previous books, she's very much been writing about her generation, but, I mean, that's what she's been kind of set up as, detrimentally so in the case of people like Patrick Evans. But Here she's writing beyond herself. I mean, you know, she's only in her early 40s, but she's writing now of a generation beyond herself, and she does that, I think, very well.
She reminds me here of, like, a kinder Anne Enright or an unfunny Laurie Moore, but then there is a bit of humour there, but it's much more oblique. I like that sort of big chilled sort of scene where she goes to her high school reunion and they don't recognise her. They don't remember her.
Yeah.
Always thinking of her as Eve instead of herself.
Yes. I mean, the key to the book, in a way, is the epigraph at the beginning from Clarice Lispector from State of Grace, which I'm just going to read now. And there is a physical bliss which cannot be compared to anything. The body is transformed into a gift, and one feels it is a gift because one is experiencing at source, and this is the line, the unmistakable good fortune of material existence. That is just so fully conveyed throughout the book, is it not? The sense of material existence, Bronwyn, the you know, her detail, her attention to detail.
Yes, yeah, and one of the things I really liked is that as each chapter starts, you're not quite sure where in time you're going to find Dorothy or one of the other characters, and you're not quite, and the observation of everyday life and how you live in your house and how things don't really change very much, but there are these little changes which years later ground the chapter where in the time as it is, but that when you're living in your house all the time, you don't pay any attention to them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean anything to you because it's just the accumulation of stuff around you and that you're just busy living your life. And I like that sense of you don't know what's happened in the intervening days, years, moments between the chapters, and you gradually get to know things. I think that I really like that, and I like the sense of that in the end, Dorothy is in her body. That is where she is living, and that is all she is living in, really.
There's always the danger with a book that diverts attention to the world in detail around it. It's a bit like walking with a toddler, you know, who wants to stop every 2 seconds to look at a leaf. She avoids that becoming a problem. I mean, I read John Updike's Couples over Christmas, and he doesn't avoid that. I mean, you're constantly thinking, for God's sake, you know, stop elaborately describing this leaf or whatever it might be.
Oh, I love Couples. Wonderful. Well, little class fluttery.
It is. We'll do that perhaps as a future book. She avoids that, I think, very well. I mean, her descriptions are very precise and very evocative and very lyrical, but she's not over-elaborate, and it never seems to detract from the story whilst being so fundamental to the telling of it. What did you think, Marcus, about that?
I quite like how she followed, I think Ali Smith said it, in Ali Smith's first novel, she desperately tried to avoid using metaphors, likes and as and simile and that sort of thing. And I felt that Perkins did as much, in that it was occasional and not overburdened. And I felt that lent much more towards the physical anchors she uses and the descriptions of a body's growth and deterioration through the book, weight gain, weight loss, comparing it to the children and the grandchildren that eventually turn up. It lent to a more dreamlike world surrounding her while the real life was happening on the internal, be it emotionally or physically.
And the book does really open your eyes and indeed your consciousness, I think, to daily life. I mean, I felt daily living was an improved thing after reading the book. You appreciate the detail in your life in a way that you could easily escape otherwise and not notice. Kieran?
She's really, really, really good. I think one thing that's worth mentioning is her astute talent for sort of illustrating an intense and sharp domestic scene. All the little details sing. And I guess it's worth mentioning too that before she was a writer, she was a graduate of the Toi Whakaare Drama School, and I think her time there has really informed her talent for writing scenes. Things like the banal act of a character peeling an orange, you know, becomes really hypnotic. And the scenes are just so atmospheric. It's a really atmospheric novel, particularly, I think, the first quarter of the novel, which has this amazing rinsed out Kodachrome sort of feel when they first arrive in Auckland, and the father says that line, "At last we live in a cloudless society." I mean, even that line in itself, her dialogue is very good. But that line is a really sad line. It's sort of pathetically full of hope.
The, I mean, one of the criticisms that I mentioned Patrick Evans earlier, and one of his criticisms of what he called the kind of Manhar school of spectacular babies was that there wasn't a proper sense of place, a proper sense of New Zealand in there. I read this book, I'm an Englishman, obviously, I read it as an outsider. It's a very light sense of place, but as New Zealanders, do you think this is noticeably New Zealand?
And also, it's not where you are, it's where you're at, and I think she does that really well.
But I found it really, it felt like New Zealand to me, and I don't know Auckland well at all, but there was a sense of sort of almost the over-passive laid-backness and just sort of things sort of happening in the slight undercurrent of that slight sort of gothic New Zealand undercurrent, like that passage where she lifts, that Dorothy's going to see her sister, her sister's going to see Dorothy, and she lifts the shops that she's going past on the way, and they pass the greengrocer with bright buckets of gerberas and vivianthus out the front, and the Turkish cafe, and the fetish shop, and the news agent, and the local councillor's office, and the fetish shop is just slipped in there.
Yeah,
you know, it's just sort of in there as this is this little suburban shopping centre, and there's this thing that you don't kind of quite expect, and it's the same sense of. I found the description of them living on the commune quite disturbing, and that obviously something was going on, and it never quite spelled out. And there's a slight sense of beneath the brightness, there's sort of not things going on that perhaps we wouldn't like too much if we looked at too closely.
As well as the attention to the physical world and that minutiae and real feel for detail. I mean, this is a novel with a really big chronological sweep, but it's a sweep that's kind of broken up into almost impressionistic moments. You know, it's almost like how much can you take out of a narrative and still actually have a narrative? Does this work as a narrative of a life, or is it just a succession of set pieces and scenes? Kieran?
I found that very difficult at first, but I will say that to that end, I was hooked right from the beginning, where the book begins with a wonderful quote from John Cage, who was one of my favourite composers. And Perkins has used the quote, "begin anywhere," and I really love that because, you know, it can apply to life and it can apply to the process of writing, and the beginning is often a place of paralysis, isn't it? And I think it's a really nice reference to how all the moments in life are the beginnings of something, and I think that's particularly resonant to the forest. Admittedly, I struggled, perhaps in that first chapter where I thought I wasn't sure how old they were, it was a little bit jumpy, but once I sort of got into the rhythm of it, it had a nice flow.
And Marcus, how did you feel it worked as a narrative as a whole?
I really liked it. I liked the opening with it was so fragmented, and I was left. Karen, I believe, referenced photographs earlier, and it had that sense of an old photo album you flip through from your childhood, where all the photos are sepia and faded. Even when they were printed at the time, they had that look about them, and short sort of foundation snatches of a family in a place. And while I found the jumping in time difficult. By the time it reached a more steady narrative later on, I had this wonderful picture of a family as a whole, the parents, strong images and strong sense of the interactions and the hazy memory of the childhood as well, which I think persists throughout the book. There are various references later on to things not remembered or misremembered that were referenced earlier, and it paints a very accurate picture of what a childhood is.
Mm.
You remember certain events, be they significant or not, and you build your family life around those.
It's a very big sweep, the novel, obviously, going from, I think Dorothy is 10 at the beginning, or 8 or 10, or very, very young, through to very, very old age. But for all the kind of huge sweep, it's essentially quite a domestic sweep. There's a lovely line at one point where it says of Dorothy, she tried to imagine her life without its family life. And this is... there was a headline in the Dominion Post in the Your Weekend section for the review of this, which is the, as a headline line writer sometimes, I know this is what you never want to put on anything. It says celebrating the ordinary, which is like, oh my God, that's going to put people off. But this is a celebration of the ordinary, and the ordinary is remarkable, and it's well conveyed in this novel. What did you think, Bronwyn, in terms of that focus of the book? You know, it's not a hugely eventful book in many ways, but that doesn't matter.
Well, I really loved it, in the sense of that as somebody said before, you suddenly appreciate your own ordinary life more. You pay attention to it because it's suddenly exposed that in fact all these things that we think of as, oh, well, that's just ordinary, or that's just boring, or that's just everyday life, are in actual fact of huge importance to the people living them. And they, one of my favourite things about the book was the jumpy narrative. I really enjoyed that. And I thought it was so realistic of what we know about other people's lives. You really only can tell a narrative of your own life, really, because no matter how closely you live with other people, you just don't know what they're doing or what their thoughts are when they're not actually right there with you. And I thought that conveyed it really well. And I thought it made the sweep of it, and the long time that we get to know Dorothy, the jumping in and out of her life at various points, it made it feel very alive, and very real. And that each time that we jumped back into her life, there may not have been an actual sort of action happening, but something important was happening. Her life was changing in different ways.
What did you all think of Dorothy herself as a character and some of the other characters in the novel? Obviously, the characters in a book like this, given that focus and that kind of lack of huge numbers of incidents, the characters are going to be very, very important. Dorothy, did Dorothy work for you as a character, Marcus?
Very much. I didn't like her at first. I was much more won over by Eve. But as Dorothy went on, so many compromises and avoidant thoughts. There was a line later in the book. She said that she feared that she lived her life on the inside, and that she had a fantasy that someone out there knew her and actually held her true self. And in many ways, she had this rich internal life, but the way she enacted it outwardly was full of fear, and some of the male characters, which in some ways are easier to talk about because they were just boundaries and sketches, interesting ones, but they were orbiting Dot, and she herself was rich and complex, and got increasingly so the older she got, while the rest of them only changed meaning really for her, I think. But by the end of it, I was so won over by her, especially as an old woman. I thought she was wonderful as an old woman.
And what about Daniel, who's this almost too perfectly archetypal bohemian outsider figure? How did he convince, and how did that relationship work in the book for you, Kieran?
Daniel was an interesting one because he was sort of a recurring character that you didn't get too much insight into, and the insight that you did get into him was Dorothy's sort of connection to him, and maybe that was her sort of glorified vision of what she thought he was, this sort of romantic bohemian drifter who kind of came in and out, the one that got away. But I thought it was quite sweet at the end when he had aged and he came back, and that was the other thing that I think that Perkins has done really nicely here, is that she's made these quite real, quite tangible characters, you know. And the whole ageing thing is handled really well in that, sure, we have Dorothy and Daniel at the end and they're old, but they have a past. There's a moment, you know, when they were young and they were going out on the raz, and you kind of realise, well, this is really tangible and it's really real and it's something that everyone has experienced or will experience.
There's that lovely line at one point, adulthood was like this, your voice calm, your face normal, while inside turmoil, your heart still 7 or 12 or 15, which, you know, is this, and I think that's very late in the book when she's very much near very old age. And that's a lovely idea that, you know, we're really all still just got carrying all that early stuff with us till the very end through this book. It's a book, it strikes me, that I find myself keep wanting to quote from. There's little bits in it that I just want to tell people about, which works so well. Bromin, did you find that it was full of those little kind of little moments that were just really felicitous?
One of my favourite things, I've just told so many people this over the last week or so, when she's... there's sort of this deep sense of yearning and time moving on, and but in amongst it all, Perkins puts these clever little pieces, and one of my favourite things, and it's so slight, when she's talking, she's at her brother's house and she's looking at the mail he's received, and one of the things is an envelope from the Who's Who organisation, and that she just writes Who's Who, the phrase owled around inside her head, talons out, and I just loved the image of that, and she just puts in these little moments that are almost separate to the story that she's telling. She's having fun with language, and she's doing clever things with it, and they're just a little rest, and then you go back to the story and the description of the brother's house, and yeah, I like it. I like that.
She has a real, I think, shrewd sense about it. There's a wonderful bit where the Daniel's jacket is left in Eve's hospital room, and she takes it, and eventually later she gives it to a school auction or something, and it ends up being worn by the hockey dad, and she has to see it every week, and then they sort of develop this slightly flirtatious relationship based from her point of view on the fact that, you know, he's representing Daniel to an extent wearing the jacket, and it's just, you know, a wonderfully evolved and evoked idea. Very well done.
Every few pages are sort of riddled with gorgeous insights and turns of phrase. And, I mean, while there is a real wistful and sort of tone and atmosphere to the book, she's also got this really wonderfully ear-clearing, chilly and brisk kind of poised style of writing. And there's that really, really, really refined psychological insight. It's so finely tuned, and every sentence is actually unarguably immaculate, and her voice comes through sort of clear as a bell. And now perhaps some people might actually, I wonder if they'll find that overwritten, but to me it works really well. I'm really attracted to it. There's no space within the text to really argue with it.
I thought as much as well, with the and countered somewhat or balanced by the somewhat clipped dialogue. Mm. I loved her dialogue. They're such simple sentences that you could hear anywhere, because people don't tend to talk in long, rambling soliloquy.
Mm.
Just these beautiful sentences, and sometimes the language of which would fix you in place. I mean, I loved one where someone referred to another character and said, "That's such an egg." And pure 80s slang, which reminded me of my best friend. But the language wasn't used as a tool of exposition. She allowed the narrative, descriptive language to do that. And then this expressive, surprising dialogue would pop out with the occasional wonderful use of swear words and expletives, which tended to either the funny or the shocking.
Very quickly, time is against us, but the Booker tips, obviously there's a degree of hype in that always, but I would happily see this on a Booker shortlist. What about the rest of you?
It's interesting that you say that, because I think the last deserving winner of the Booker Prize was Anne Enright, and this reminds me, like I said earlier, it reminds me a little bit like that, although of course it was a really buffoonish thing to say, to start that whole Booker Prize hype. It's quite unfair to the author. But the other thing that I thought that's noteworthy about this book is that in my whole time as a bookseller, I've not actually seen such a buying frenzy for a New Zealand title like this since Mr. Pip, which of course was nominated for the Booker Prize.
Yes. The rest of you, Bronwyn and Marcus, could you see this?
I agree with it. everybody says, yes, it's absolutely up there with a chance. And it would have been up there with a chance even if they hadn't started the house buses. And I don't know if it works on so many levels, and it can hold its own with anything else that might be thrown out there, and certainly sweep the board with some of the nominations that there've been in the past few years, I think.
Yes. Marcus?
I find early talk of book, a shortlisting, a longlisting, or winning distracting. And I really like the way, when it was brought up, Emily Perkins wasn't drawn on it. She didn't really comment on it. She wasn't interested. And I think that's the important thing. It's the book itself is wonderful. I mean, it's such a well-written book, and it's so beautifully expressed and contained. And I really finish a book to the last page, to the last word, close it and think, that was perfect. I'm done now. And I had that feeling of completeness to it. And to start talking about it in context of prize winning, I think does it a disservice. Much like talking it in context of being a great New Zealand book rather than a great book written by a New Zealander.
Yeah. And certainly from her point of view, that way madness lies, I would imagine, best avoided even thinking about such things.
Don't get me wrong, I would love to see it win, but there you go.
No, it's a bit early in the day, and it's such a crapshoot. But, well, thank you very much, Kieran, Bronwyn and Marcus. The time, as I said, is against us. Thank you very much. And we'll be back again next month when we'll be talking about the new novel from Hilary Mantel. And don't forget to follow the rest of our coverage of this month's book, The Forests, on our website. Thanks very much for listening.